Chapter 6 261 From Miasin on to Ahesh Ahuk, and thence to Kophus on the lava plains of Taurasus. The followers of Lorgar travelled from encampment to encampment, quelling such armed resistance as was raised against them, and speaking to the freed slaves. 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 numbered the host of the One by the time they liberated the internees of the plantations at Siasas and Uresh. The number of the gathering devotees proved problematic, as it had after Taranthus, and a semi-permanent camp was set at Marina, where the greater part of the faithful remained while Lorgar took the core of the converts into the deeper desert, ever driven on by his visions to pave the way for the arrival of the One. It is not enough that we break the shackles of slaves. There are others who have sought succour from the Covenant and been rejected, Lorgar told Cor Pharaon, after the bearer of the word had announced that they would once more be heading for the sands that slay. There is nothing of worth in the low barons, Cor Pharaon replied. But Lorgar simply smiled. The Archdeacon would not accept this. You would recruit more of the declined? That would take an age. The slaves come to us 1,000, 3,000 at a time. The nomads of the wastes live in tribes no more than 300 or 400 strong. Were you even to find them, we would waste all our resources on the recruitment. This plan is folly, Lorgar. We should head next for Gastaresh, to the salt flats.
Lorgar would not be swayed, though, and in his calm manner insisted that they would head into the low barrens at the following wake rise, which would herald the next dawn away. The journey was not so storm-ridden as the first, though winds raged and sands stripped paint from metal and timbers with a fury that flayed uncovered flesh. When asked where they were heading, Lorgar would not reply directly, saying only that he was being guided by the One. Cor Pharaon continued to comfort him as repeated visions assailed Lorgar's waking thoughts, always of the golden warrior and the robed magus, which the Archdeacon took as a sign that the powers were still content with the course their messengers had taken. Then they came upon the expanse known as the Crater of Sorrows. 40 kilometres across, scarred into the wastes in a bygone age and littered with the debris of a broken sky city. Rich pickings for any who dared its rim, but such treasure hunters were few and far between, for the crater was cursed by the powers, haunted by a drake beast that lived beneath the sands and devoured entire expeditions. The nomads had many names for the monster, whose presence forced them to divert by a day and more on their journeys between the oases at Furth, Cornassa, Alnerga, and Ashadsa. Cain's Serpent, it was called, and the Doom of Cities. Mostly it was known in declined legend as the Kingweum. 262. It was with some anxiety that the caravan crossed the ridged rock into the bowl of the crater early one morn day. Patrol yachts and lookouts scoured the sands for any sign of the diabolic creature. At word from Lorgar, they left their vehicles on rocky ground and ventured out on foot, swathed in robes and carrying thick shades against the strengthening sun. The winds swiftly eradicated all trace of their route, but the slowly rising orb of the powers gave them the means to navigate for the heart of the Crater of Sorrows. Some 4 kilometres they had traversed when there came a shout from scouts on sunstriders riding a few hundred metres ahead. Lorgar spied it next with his immortal eyes, but it was only moments before Cor Pharaon saw that which had raised the alarm. A ridge of sand, near 10 metres high, ploughing through the dunes on a course parallel to their own. Axata called the several hundred to order, at first gathering them en masse to meet the Kingweum, as they watched its course change, circling around them now that they had stopped. How it knew of their position was impossible to tell.
No, Lorgar called out to them. Spread out. Give it no single target.
Heeding these wise words, the converts split into smaller groups, putting several dozen metres between themselves as the bulge in the ground that was the Kingweum turned sharply and arrowed towards them. At the centre stood Lorgar, mace in his hands, shade discarded so that he might move freely, sweat running in thick rivers from his bald scalp. His skin was the colour of liquid gold in the low sunlight, inhuman muscles bulging beneath. About half a kilometre distant, the hump in the sands disappeared. 263. With the progress of their foe hidden from sight, the converts started to panic, shouting to each other to see if its course had been spied, moving closer together again, instinctively seeking the protection of the group.
"Keep your distance!" roared Lorgar.
But his warning came too late. In a spume of broken rock and red sands, 100 meters high, the king worm erupted from the desert depths, its fanged maw open to swallow 24 converts amidst several tons of grit and ash. With a crash that sent ripples flowing through the sands, the monstrous beast fell upon the surface, crushing another 30 men and women beneath its bulk. Corpheron stood rooted to the spot, never in his life having faced anything so terrifying. Here was the wrath of the powers incarnate, and his first thought was for the wrongs he had done them with his lip service to Lorgar's sermons of the One. He offered up silent prayer and apology there and then, promising never to stray from the path of the imperial truth again. The King Wyrm was neither worm nor serpent nor drake, not any creature depicted in the histories and bestiaries that Lorgar had translated for Corpheron. It was near 200 meters long, flanks shimmering with triangular scales of gold and red, each the equal in size of a warrior's full shield. Black barbs, like vestigial limbs, each 5 meters long, studded its length, dragging it through the sands. Behind its head was a bony, frilled crest that encompassed its neck, splayed slightly and quivering, marked with rings of ochre and blue among the gold. 3 clusters of multifaceted eyes stared at the archdeacon from beneath horny brows. The sun, sand, and dead warriors reflected in gem-like organs each the size of his head. The mouth split almost the length of the 5-meter-long head, lined with several rows of scimitar-like teeth, black as the ambulatory barbs, dripping with thick saliva, whose noxious stench could be smelt even at this distance. Broken bones and pieces of flesh from the converts wedged between the fangs alongside older pieces of rotting carcasses and the bones of animals that had wandered into the King Wyrm's lair. 264. Axarta and his warriors responded with shouts and curses, while fusil blasts and explosive arrows bounced harmlessly from the King Wyrm's thick scales. The monster thrashed its tail, flattening another score of Corpheron's soldiers, carving a meters-deep furrow in the red sand. Lorgar broke into a run, heading directly for the King Wyrm, mace held in one hand as he accelerated to a full sprint, seeming to fly over the shifting grit dunes, leaving barely a footprint in his wake. The King Wyrm saw him and coiled, raising its head 30 meters above the desert, silhouetted against the merciless glare of the rising sun. It swayed left and right, eyes glittering, judging the approach of its prey. Without a sound, the King Wyrm lunged, massive jaw falling upon the bearer of the word, scooping him up in a flurry of sands and shattered rock. Corpheron let out a cry of dismay and fell to his knees, his weapon falling from numb fingers. He watched in disbelief as the King Wyrm reared up again, trailing an avalanche of sand from its jaw, straightening its neck to swallow. Similar shouts of horror and fear echoed from the converts. Suddenly, the King Wyrm tilted its head, flexing its neck again as though its meal had become stuck. It spasmed and threw its head sideways, crashing into the ground to smash a handful more of the converts into bloody paste. Head lolling, the monster thrashed through the dunes, its claw barbs churning the air and sand with uncoordinated scrambling. A ripple passed along the beast from head to tail, hurling tons of dirt into the air, a shiver that rattled the barbs while the crest fluttered for several heartbeats and then fell limp. Corpheron stared on dumbstruck as the King Wyrm's mouth opened slowly, the jaw prized apart from within by Lorgar, who staggered out along a lolling tongue as though it were a boarding ramp before falling face first into the sand. Almost as one, the converts and Cor Faeron were on their feet and dashing to the aid of the bearer of the word.
"Don't touch me,"
Lorgar warned, struggling to his feet, coated head to foot in the saliva of the Kingwyrm. His skin was sloughing away from the muscle in places, dribbles of melting fat falling to the dirt.
"Its spit burns the flesh."
The bearer of the word flung himself into the sands and scraped what he could of the thick gunk from his naked body, exposed flesh raw in places when he was finished. Only then would he let Cor Faeron tend to his wounds, with the command to Axata and the others to return to the caravan and salvage such scales and bones as they could from the huge corpse.
"And what would you do with them?"
asked Axata.
"Fashion a sign," said Lorgar, "so that all who pass shall see that the slayer of the Kingwyrm will be found at Marina. The word shall travel faster and farther than ever we could bear it ourselves."